Hello, everyone. This is John Marks, the editor of CopsAlive.com, and we're here with a special edition of our Cops Alive audio bulletin in preparation for the annual police week in Washington, D.C., here in the United States. Several of us were talking the other day as part of the Concerns of Police Survivors board meeting here in Colorado that this event can be somewhat overwhelming for people who have never been there before, and we decided that maybe we ought to get a group of people together to share some ideas about their experiences there and maybe give a few tips to those that have never gone before so that we'll make it a little less overwhelming, because it can be an overwhelming event all by itself. So what we're going to do is just have a few of us share some ideas about their experiences with the Peace Officers Memorial Day service, the candlelight vigil, and just the experience of going to National Police Week. My first guest is Shelley Hoey. She is a member of the Board of Directors of Colorado COPS, and I welcome you, Shelley. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about your experience, and then maybe share some of your ideas on how to make this a smoother event, even though it is going to be a heartbreaking and sometimes overwhelming event?
Well, I first became a member of COPS January 23rd of 2001, when our son-in-law was killed. He was a Colorado State Trooper, was killed in a car accident when he was responding to a reported sighting of the Texas 7 prison escapees who had killed a Texas police officer. They were reported to have been seen in Colorado, and there were two remaining that had not been captured or turned themselves in, and he got a report of a sighting of those inmates and was responding to that call. He went through the tunnel and lost control of his patrol car and was killed. So that was how we became members of COPS. We've been involved in it off and on, have attended some of the seminars, and we decided that there was a very real need for a member of the board on the Western Slope. Unfortunately, that reality came to be a fact in July of 2009, when a Montrose, Colorado police officer was killed in the line of duty. So it's been a really hard thing to face that family and know that they're loved by someone other than their own families, that there are people out there who have walked in their own shoes and can help them along the way in their journey of grief. One of the biggest things that honors those officers is National Police Week, but it also helps those survivors by attending the conferences put on by COPS. So in 2002, we went to Washington, D.C. to be a part of National Police Week and to honor our officer, Jason. When we got there, we didn't know anything at all about what to expect, because nobody had really told us. We had watched a video, but that was about it. We knew that it was a pretty big event, but didn't know a lot.
Yeah.
So I would just say that from past experiences, and my daughter and I went again in 2004, and actually it was more relaxed, but also it was we were able to reach out and help other survivors of the current year, just to comfort them and know that they too were going to survive this. And being at Police Week is such an honor to those officers who gave their lives that year and in past years. I would encourage people to attend the sessions if they're there, because they're very important in that journey of grief. There are other people who have walked in those shoes, and they have experiences that you can draw from. So I think attending Police Week conferences is probably the biggest thing. Washington, D.C. is an exciting place to be, and you don't want to miss out on some of those sites, but there are other times that you can go there and experience those as well. So the first day you walk in there and it's pretty overwhelming because there are so many people, they will register you. And one of the biggest things that I think that you should do when you arrive at Police Week is to attend one of the orientation sessions, because that will just give you an overall view of what's going to happen that week. They will tell you times and places that you need to be to better accommodate your schedule and to let you know what's expected of you as survivors, especially the first year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one on the agenda. The very first opening session of COPS is pretty phenomenal because you hear stories. You hear stories of survival and hope and how COPS was founded, and that in itself is just a phenomenal story.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to the breakout sessions, and those are small. You feel a little more comfortable in a room talking because they are smaller group sessions, and they are group specific. We attended the one for in-laws, and we were there being able to talk to other in-laws who had experienced the loss of an officer, but also were trying to help their child cope with the loss of a husband or a wife.
Yeah.
And I've said many times that I not only lost a son-in-law whom we loved very much, but we also lost our daughter because she ceased to be the person that she was mm-hmm. on the day her husband died. So in being with other parents of those surviving spouses really helped us to know that we weren't alone in how they had dealt with things. I know my daughter has attended the spouses conferences at Police Week and also at the spouses getaway, and she too came away saying that those other people really helped her know that there was hope beyond, and a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
So the breakout sessions are wonderful. The candlelight vigil, I told the surviving spouse of the officer that was killed in Montrose this year to make sure that she took something to put on the wall because she would feel very lost and like, oh, I should have done that. And I know that a lot of people that we talked to that had not done that said that they felt like they were kind of letting their officer down because they hadn't taken anything that first year because they weren't aware of it. And so she did make a collage of pictures mm-hmm. and laminated it to take to the wall and put it on. So masking tape is available there, but I would encourage those survivors to take their own. And I understand that we're going to make bags. I think that that's a suggestion to put in the bag is masking tape.
Okay.
For the Colorado survivors to take.
Yeah, we've already talked about providing bags of various things that people just don't think about
right.
When they're thinking about so many other things to take with them. Can you give me some other ideas of what people have put up on the wall and, size and things?
Some of it's quite comical to see because a lot of the police officers, they were there. Those other officers were their drinking buddies. They played cards together. They played ball together, sports, whatever. And so you see quite an array of things, bottles of whiskey, cans of beer, pictures, obviously, flowers. And the one thing that there is so much stuff on the wall that sometimes you fail to even really appreciate the serenity of it because there's so much stuff there during Police Week that is left just as mementos.
Yeah.
Pictures, I think, are probably the biggest thing. Patches from the department are left. Toys from children. So anything that is a personal note, certainly don't leave something that's important for you. If it was something that was between the two of you, don't take that exact thing. You might take a duplicate or something similar because they do gather all of that stuff up and you don't get it back.
Yeah.
told the very first year that we went that we're like, so doesn't any of this stuff get stolen from, obviously there's a homeless problem in Washington, D.C., and so they told us, they assured us that nothing was ever taken from that memorial, that it was almost sacred ground, and the homeless people didn't bother it. So, which is just amazing that they don't go down there and take stuff, but nothing's usually taken. It is all gathered up at the end of the police weekend, taken to be archived and placed. Some of it, I think, is placed in the museum.
Wow.
So that's what's left. I know the very first year my daughter got a big bouquet of white roses because her husband was killed shortly before, 2 days before their wedding anniversary, and they had white roses at their wedding, and so that was special to them, and so she mm-hmm. did take a bouquet of white roses. And he was known as a big teddy bear and loved panda bears, and so she found a little ceramic panda bear to take down, and that was just, nobody else knew the significance of it but her
right.
and her family. So those types of things are left at the wall. Certainly pictures, family pictures, and again, duplicating them and placing them in some sort of lamination to put on the wall. And I would just caution you that, you know, there are so many names on the wall that you certainly don't want to cover somebody else's loved one's name up. So you put it in a spot that is close, but yet is not infringing on somebody else's place either. So another suggestion that I would make, they do provide colored pencils that you can actually make a rubbing of your officer's name.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another thing that I would encourage you to take your own, because we weren't aware of that either. And so we were standing in line waiting for blue colored pencils to become available. And so that's important. They do furnish paper that has the National Law Enforcement Memorial logo on it. And so that's pretty special to make a rubbing of that officer's name. And then the museum also has a matting that you can put that into with the officer's picture and an end of watch on it. Some of the other things that are pretty much a necessity in Washington, D.C. that time of year are obviously an umbrella and a raincoat and some sort of jacket. Even during the seminars, a lightweight sweater or jacket is an essential, because they keep the room so cold with air conditioning that sometimes I felt like I was failing to listen to the speaker because I was freezing.
Yeah.
So that's pretty important. Comfortable walking shoes, because you do a lot of walking and a lot of standing. And a camera, because there are things that you just don't want to ever forget. So you can capture those to take home with you. The memorial service at the Capitol, it in itself is very overwhelming, because you get on the buses, you're briefed not only at the orientation, but then they pull you aside for this year's survivors and give you information on how you will be lined up. They always do the states alphabetical, and then the officers within the state are alphabetical. And so you have a certain spot on the bus, and the number of people that are going to walk up to the wreath to place the flower in the wreath with the surviving or the primary survivor, they need to know those numbers, because they base those numbers on how many buses they're going to take to the memorial that morning with the current survivors in it. And just making sure that you know kind of ahead of time how many people are going to be walking up to the memorial itself is a help.
Yeah.
So you can let them know that the day of that orientation. And they put you on the bus, and because we were from Colorado, obviously we're kind of at the middle or the beginning of the alphabet, and so we sat on the bus for quite some time. They do provide you a box breakfast to take, and when you sit there, and once you're on those buses, you don't get off. So make sure that you don't forget to take anything with you that day, such as your umbrellas and a snack to take with you to sit there, because you are on the buses and you are sitting there for quite some time before it starts in the chairs waiting for it to begin.
Right.
So about a 2.5-hour ceremony that day at the Capitol. And then I would encourage everybody at that point, after that's over with, to go over to the memorial, because they walk the wreath from the Capitol over to the National Law Enforcement Memorial and place it there. And you can stay there as long as you want, late at night. They have a changing of the guard that day, and they change the guard, I believe it's every 30 minutes, of police officers from around the United States do that. And that's quite impressive to watch as well. And just knowing how much your officer is being honored. Clothing, like I said, raincoats and comfortable shoes, comfortable clothing to wear to the sessions, church attire to wear to the memorial service, which is going to be held on May 15th. It's always on the 15th. And so Saturday this year will be that. A lot of walking, a lot of standing, so... the other thing that they do there at Police Week is the second day of the conferences. They have closing sessions, and I believe this year will be installation of the national board members as well. And that pretty much ends the conferences, and then they have a wind-down kind of get-together picnic. And it's just a nice time to get to sit and relax and reflect back on the week's activities, perhaps make your rounds and see those people that you've gotten acquainted with, that maybe you've made a connection with, exchange names and phone numbers and emails to keep in touch, because that's something that you really do want to keep in touch with, those people that you've made a connection with, because they will help you get through this. And they've been there, and so, or perhaps they're current year survivors too, and it's just a shoulder to cry on or another person to lean on. And some friendships from around the United States have really been formed and are very long lasting. So
I'm sure.
I would encourage people to attend that, even though they might say, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do one more thing. It's just a time to sit back and relax, and it's okay to smile and you have fun there.
Mm-hmm.
So, the other thing I was going to say is, as far as taking mementos,
mm-hmm.
maybe not necessarily mementos anymore to the wall, but a lot of people wear T-shirts or buttons, jewelry with their officer's name on them, or T-shirts with their officer's pictures on them. And we actually did, my son designed a T-shirt that has our son-in-law's name on it, and we did wear those in a sweatshirt to the candlelight vigil that had his name on it. So if that's possible, even a tote bag maybe with his picture on it is something that is appropriate to take. But I know that a lot of people were saying, well, I wish I'd known about that, because I would have taken the time to do something like that. And buttons with their officers' pictures on them are seen a lot. And definitely a lot of tote bags and a lot of T-shirts that just are a memory of those officers.
Well, so, that's one of the reasons we decided to do this, is that we didn't want our members from Colorado going and then having regrets that they didn't know about something in advance. So we wanted to make sure that we shared some of these thoughts so that people had the opportunity to prepare. Maybe they don't want to, or maybe they, you know, don't have time, but at least there won't be those slight regrets once they're there thinking, oh, I wish I had made a T-shirt or a tote bag or something.
Right. And when I spoke with the officer's wife from this year in Montrose on Monday. She did not know that. She didn't know that we could, that they could do that. And she said that she was going to check into it definitely so that they would have something with his name and picture on it, because she hadn't even thought about that. She did not see any of that in the videos that were provided, and so she definitely wanted to be able to at least investigate it to see if it was a possibility this year.
Good.
To be able to take that for her family members as well. So the other thing that I would say, if there is at all time possible to go down to the memorial at the end, and I know that this year, in a lot of the brochures that we've received, say that everything will be cleared away from the wall, on Sunday night. And if there's time before you fly out on Monday morning to go back down to the memorial, it's a very peaceful and serene setting when all of the stuff is removed. It's very beautiful when all the flowers are there, and everybody's things that they've brought are such an honor and a tribute to those officers. But then if you go back down when it's completely cleared away, you find a feeling of peace there, that those officers really have been honored, and that it's a very beautiful and peaceful place and a setting that they can be honored. So I would also encourage this year's survivors who have not been to the wall, other than National Police Week, and have never seen it without all of the stuff surrounding it, that they go down and try to do that before they leave, because it is quite a different setting. Almost unrecognizable.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So. Gosh, I don't know if I have covered everything.
Well, we've got several other people that can cover the rest, and I want to thank you for your time and just your commitment to survivors around the country and even around the world. Thank you for your generosity and sharing some of your experiences and sharing some of your ideas.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
I hope it helps.
I'm sure it will. Okay, our next guest is Detective Robin Danny with the Thornton, Colorado Police Department. Robin is also the treasurer of her local FOP Lodge number 17 here in Colorado, and has attended National Police Week as a serving police officer. And we thought that this perspective was also really an important perspective, because sometimes we as police officers don't think that it's our place to be there, and I think we're going to disagree with you and encourage you to go. Robin, welcome, and thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Can you share a little bit about your personal story and what took you to National Police Week in the past?
Sure. Basically, every other year that we don't have to go to a national FOP convention, our lodge sends a contingent back to Memorial Week. I know it's gone on for many years, and I applaud them for doing so. I think it's a wonderful thing, and it really gives you a different perspective on exactly what it is and exactly how powerful it is. The first time I went was 2 years ago, and I'll be going again this year in 2010. I wanted to go because I seem to be that person at the office that a lot of people come to for help with things. And I've put myself through the COPS training. I've put myself through some peer support training. I've attended training on doing police funerals. And although we haven't had a line of duty death, I just completed a funeral for a friend in February. So I'm just very interested in that. It's a good way for me to serve. And it feels really good to be able to serve in that way. So I really wanted to go to the memorial to see what that was all about. I went with a group of people when I went in 2008, and some of those people had been before, some had not. This year, I'm the only one that's been there before, and we're trying to send every year that we do send a group at least one person so that they can kind of know what to expect and know how to get around and things like that. And I had thought of some things that I thought was just really kind of important to go over for officers that, you know, are not necessarily escorting or are not necessarily you know, serving in the honor guard, things like that, just attending officers. And the first thing that's really important is that you need to check with your airline regarding taking your weapon. Different airlines have different rules, and I won't go into all the fun it is to try to do it, but that is just definitely something that we need to do, because we wear our full uniform, our Class A uniform, to the memorial service. Other things, just kind of in general, we checked out the Metro before we went. It's a great way to get around there, the subway is, and you can look at the maps online, and their web address is www.wmata.com, and you can kind of get yourself acclimated as to where things are and where you need to be when you get there, because it's really, it's the only way to get around once you're there. A couple other things I thought about, obviously take good walking shoes. You're walking a lot, and you need to be prepared for that. We also, I had a backpack for when we went out sightseeing or when we went out, you know, to the memorial or whatever, so that we had some place to put all that stuff that we collected, purchases, brochures, you know, whatever. And I ended up carrying that around the whole time, but that's okay. It was a good place for us to gather everything so that we could get everything back to our hotel room at the end of the day. And, you know, we did a lot of sightseeing as well as being there for the memorial, but the one of the most important things I think that we did was we visited the actual memorial before the candlelight service. I think it's really important to acclimate yourself as to what it is and the feeling that's there. I've seen pictures of the memorial, of course, but I really didn't realize, number one, how big it was, and number two, how just seeing all those names was just totally overwhelming and really quite emotional. There's so many people there that are there grieving, and just the emotion that's there is really quite amazing. And you want to take time to walk around the memorial and look at all the things that people have left. Look at the pictures. Know that these people were more than just a cop. They have families. They have friends. Sure, they were a cop. Yes, they died, you know, serving their city, state, country, whatever. But it really meant a lot to me to walk around and really look at things. And then we did rubbings, of course, of a lot of officers that we knew in our area. We've even been requested to do some rubbings by some fellow officers that, you know, were more personally associated maybe with people who had been lost. And they're really good there about leading you to where exactly that person's name is so that you can do the rubbings. And the pieces of paper they give you say the National Law Enforcement Memorial on them, and those are really great. Mm-hmm. One thing that I would suggest is that you maybe take a crayon or two with you. There are pencils there. There are some crayons that people have left, but crayons work really well. And, you know, they're broken and they're hard to find and all that kind of stuff, so you might want to take something like that. But that's definitely something that you want to do before the candlelight vigil, just to walk around and see it all and spend a lot of time doing that. And then, of course, the candlelight vigil itself is a very emotional program. The program is meant to evoke that emotion, but what I found was even more than the program, you could actually feel physically just the raw emotion that's there, and the sense of loss that's there was really quite amazing, and very overwhelming for me. I don't know what got into me, but I became very emotional there, and good thing I had lots of tissue, and I knew in my group that I was there with, it was okay to break down, and it was okay to take advantage of the support that I received from my fellow officers that were there. But don't be afraid to do that, because it was an awesome experience and one that I would never change. We don't wear our uniforms to the candlelight vigil. We normally wear FOP shirts. We're, at least in our little group, we wear matching shirts, just so that we can identify each other. And then we took some time after the vigil to walk around some more, meet and greet other officers. We did that the whole trip, because you can usually tell officers, you know, even when you just see them walking down a sidewalk, and we were oftentimes talking to officers from all over the country, and, you know, just doing doing that networking that's so important and finding out why they were there and all those kinds of things. And after the vigil, we did a lot of the same. We stood around and talked, and it was really a great sharing time. The memorial service, as I said, we wear our full dress uniform, our Class A's, including hats. The one thing that people tend to forget is a badge shroud. You are, of course, to be shrouding your badge. You might want to take a jacket and possibly a slicker, just depending upon what the weather in D.C. is going to be. When I was there, the first 2 days I was there, it was raining sideways, and then it became very beautiful. So you just never know what it's going to be, and you'd rather have it there than not have it.
Right.
There's not a whole lot of seating at the memorial service. The seating that is there is reserved for those families that, you know, have a current loss or are there, you know, with their escort officers or whatever. So you have to stand for long periods of time and be prepared for it. There are some long speeches. So you just need to make sure that you're prepared for that. And with that, you'll want to take, like, snacks and water with you. There's not a lot close by that you can get to. They were handing out water the day that I was there, but I think they ran out of water. It was a very hot and humid and icky day. So just make sure that you take some stuff like that and make sure that you eat, like, either a late breakfast or early lunch. We made the mistake of not eating before we went to the memorial service. By the time it was done, we were all just starving, so that's a really good thing to do. And then this, for me, wasn't as emotional as the candlelight vigil. It's, like I said, a lot of speeches, and it was a very nice service, but just a very different feel there. It was very respectful and honoring and things like that. And then we went back to the memorial site. They do the wreath laying there after the memorial service. The only other suggestions I had was to look at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial website. They have other events that are going on throughout the week that you can attend that were really good. We went to the pipe band march and service, which, looking at it on paper, I wasn't so sure about, but it was awesome, and we had just a great time there. And it's just a really good time to connect with officers from all over the United States and you know, just make those connections and just really get into why we're there and why it's so important that we do be there for other officers, whether or not we've lost someone or not.
Yeah.
And I think that's about all I had.
Well, can you just elaborate just for a second on why you think it's important for serving officers to be there, even if you haven't lost somebody in the line of duty this year?
Well, it's a way to honor all of those officers, and truly they are our brothers and sisters, officers, you know, throughout the whole world, quite frankly. And to be able to honor them in that way and to be there to honor their service, honor what they did for us, because truly they're, you know, they are the thin blue line. It is us, and if it wasn't them, it could have been one of us. We just don't know. And I think it's really important for the families to see that there are a lot of people out there, that there is this law enforcement family, that even though we don't know them, we still care about them, and we still honor them and respect them and appreciate their sacrifice.
Yeah, and I think we're there honoring, supporting the families. That's why we're all involved in Concerns of Police Survivors, and it seems that it is just one giant opportunity for everyone to come together and share. And I appreciate your comments about, you know, feeling okay to express your grief, because that's the time to do it. That's the place to do it. And nobody should feel embarrassed about that.
Absolutely.
Robin, I want to thank you very much for your time and thank you for your service, but also thank you for what you're doing for cops and the whole Concerns of Police Survivors family. I appreciate you sharing.
Thank you.
My next guest is Kelly Young, who is the current president of the Colorado chapter of the Concerns of Police Survivors organization here. And Kelly, thanks for joining us. Can you share a little bit about your story?
Absolutely. My husband was Donnie Young, a detective with the Denver Police Department, and he was shot and killed May 8th, which fell on Mother's Day of 2005. my family, myself and my two girls, my parents and my sister, all attended National Police Week in May of 2006. It's an extremely emotional week. I didn't really have any idea what it was all going to be about. And it definitely is a remarkable experience. But it's definitely an emotional time for all the family members that go.
Yeah. And everybody's agreed so far that it can be incredibly overwhelming. And one of the reasons we all agreed to do this is to try to prepare people as best we can on what to expect and what to prepare and how best to navigate through this without it being totally overwhelming. We know it's going to be a little overwhelming, but maybe we can help minimize that. So share with us some of your ideas and some of the things you learned about how to prepare for this experience.
Well, one of the things that I try to do is actually, you know, talk to the widow and go through the agenda of, you know, from the moment she gets off the airplane. Probably the one of the most emotional things is just the fact that all the officers meet you from the minute that you get off the plane. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that I try to set the family up with just speaking with them, is just to kind of let them know how their entire week will go. And to let them know that it is extremely emotional, it's draining. If they're working, they will almost need to take a vacation once they get back from their vacation, because you're just zapped of all your strength from going through this whole ordeal. But one of the things that I, and it seems like it's kind of a small thing, but one thing that I didn't quite realize was just how much people would be expressing their information about their officer. I had T-shirts with Donnie's photograph on them, and I didn't take any of them with me. And everybody wears all of their department information, from T-shirts with their loved one's photograph on it, your remembrance bracelets, you know, any necklaces with their badge on it, any like photo buttons, anything just to connect you with your officer.
Yeah.
And that was something that I wish that I would have known prior to going. The other thing that was kind of fun for my daughter was we did take some little department badges. You know, they just give them away to the schools and things like that, just
right.
Little Denver police badges that that my daughter could, you know, share with the other kids. They do a lot of exchanging of pins and patches and things like that. And I did know that ahead of time, so we took a whole stack of pins and patches that she could give away to other kids, and they then in turn gave her theirs from their father's department.
Cool.
We also were told ahead of time to make up a photo collage and have it laminated because it is possible that it'll rain. So we just made up an entire, about the size of a placemat, collage of different photographs of Donnie with the girls, with me, you know, with his uniform on, you know, anything that we thought would be special and we wanted to share with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that you realize that you're going to leave it there. So it's not going to be something, you know, don't put anything in it that you want to bring home with you, because it's something that you put at the wall and you leave it there for everybody else to see. And it's really heartbreaking to just walk through that whole line of just people's memorabilia that they've left to share their loved one with everybody. So it's you want to make sure that your officer and your loved one is represented also.
Okay.
Let's see, what were some other things? One of the other things that you can do if you happen to not take any memorabilia with you is you can go over to the law enforcement memorial store and you can actually look up your officer, and it will print a little like index size card that will have their picture as well as their department, their end of watch day, and you can go and take that and pin that or tape that where your officer's name is. So you'll see that a lot. I remember last year when we went, the Burns family knew that nobody was there from the Templeton family. Uh-huh. So they went ahead and bought a little name card with Zach Templeton's picture and his name on it and took a picture for, you know, the Templeton family when they got home. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah.
The law enforcement memorial store also, if you want to buy things, they've got T-shirts. It's like a roll call T-shirt that has all of the names of that year, the officers that went on the wall that year. So that's always kind of a nice keepsake. The other thing that they do that's really nice, that they'll normally do them while you can wait for them or you can order them and pick them up the next day, are those kind of metal bracelets. You know, you can have anything inscribed on them that you'd like, but that's always a nice thing to come home with if you don't already have one. And that's something you can, you know, wear year-round.
Yeah.
Let's see. The day of the actual, let me start with the candlelight vigil. It's a really, really long ceremony. I mean, the survivors get on the bus, you know, in the morning. Well, not quite in the morning, but very early afternoon.
Right.
And you need to make sure you take some kind of food and water with you. There's not a lot of places to eat. There is like a Burger King or McDonald's that's within walking distance, but you got to remember that all those seats are kind of first come, first served. So if the whole family gets up to go to dinner, you're going to lose your seat. So if maybe even one family member can run over and get hamburgers for everybody else, but it's a long, long evening. And it also, even if the weather's been nice in the morning, it can get really cold at night. So just remember to, you know, take a jacket with you. You might even want to take an umbrella. If you've got kids with you, take something to keep them occupied. It's a really long time of just sitting, hanging out and waiting.
Yeah.
And I think someone you had already mentioned this, but, you know, make sure you are wearing comfortable shoes. There's a lot of walking. Even if you take the buses everywhere, you've got to, you know, walk to and from the bus to either the candlelight vigil or the memorial location. And you don't really want to be wearing high heels. It just doesn't work. By the end of the trip, your feet are killing you.
Yeah.
And I'd say probably those tips also apply to the day of the memorial. You know, again, it's a long day. Make sure you've got some things to occupy the kids. Take your umbrella, your sunscreen. You just never know what the weather's going to be. Take your jacket. And also, don't forget your camera. You know, this is a time when you definitely want to take a lot of pictures at all of these different events. And especially if you've got some family members that can't afford the trip to D.C., you know, you want to make sure that you capture all of these memories. And it's very comforting after, you know, you've come back to be able to look back over those pictures. You know, I think all of us as family knows that, you know, you forget. There's just so much going on that you forget all of those little things that happen that, you know, you want to be able to remember. And photographs obviously can help you do that. So I would definitely recommend, you know, taking as many pictures as you can.
Okay.
Let's see. The one thing that I think that I wish that I would have done that first year regarding the wall is I wish that I would have actually gone down there when it wasn't so busy, so that I could have walked around and had more personal time to reflect. You do see the wall the night of the candlelight vigil, but it's just there's so many people there that you almost don't have the quiet time to be able to reflect over just, you know, just how important and what an honor it is to be there. So if, you know, if they can have some extra time, even if they have to stop there on their way to the airport, it'd be a good thing to just go down there when the whole crowd isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think if there was anything else. I think the other thing that, you know, I'd like to just remind people is that, you know, the COPS seminars are so, so very important. This whole week is so exhausting, and the families don't want to skip the memorial-type events. Therefore, they decide to skip the seminar classes and go take a nap or whatever.
Right.
But I just would not recommend that at all. These classes are the first opportunity that a lot of the family members get to realize that they're not alone, and regardless of at what phase they are in their healing, someone is experiencing the same thing. And it just you just leave there with such a different perspective. Whether it's just that you were afforded the opportunity to be able to tell your story, or you know meet someone who, you know, you are able to model your healing after and say, you know what, I'm not going to be in that position, and I'm going to heal myself. I'm going to get there. It's just a really uplifting time, and it's not anything that you want to miss. And for those coworkers that go to DC, there is a coworker seminar. And the year that I went, only Jeff Barron and Jack Bishop were the only two in the room. So they're not always as popular as they should be, but I think coworkers are realizing that with a little bit of help, you know, they can go through the healing process also.
Yeah.
It's certainly worth a try rather than holding all of this emotion bottled up inside and then realizing that you can no longer do the job of a police officer. And we certainly don't want any of those officers to ever give up on their career.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a great time for them to start their healing process also. And, you know, and I've got to say the same thing with the kids. You know, a lot of times the moms just are so taken over by their own grief that they forget that their children are grieving also. And the kids' programs are unbelievable. You know, for these kids, it probably is the first and maybe only time that these kids will get to see and talk to other kids that are their age and are suffering the same things that they're suffering. And even if the kids are doing really well and they've, you know, maybe they're seeing a therapist or something, if anything else, the kids will have a great time. I mean, the FBI agents that take the kids on their adventures are wonderful. I mean, I just can't say enough about them. They just handhold these kids and take and do things with them that are just unbelievable. And I have yet to meet a child that attended any of these that didn't have a good time. And make sure the kids leave room in their suitcase because they come home with tons of stuff. I mean, they get stuffed animals, they do crafts, they get all kinds of pins and necklaces and just all kinds of things that you would never even think of, water bottles, T-shirts, hats. And the kids want to keep it all. So make sure you don't stuff your suitcase completely full. Let the kids bring home all of their souvenirs.
That's a good one.
A lot of the kids put the pins on their lanyards,
mm-hmm.
And that's just a wonderful keepsake. All the officers from all different departments will just constantly keep handing the kids their police department badges,
mm-hmm.
or pins,
right.
And the kids just keep putting them on their lanyards. And Kelsey has actually taken hers numerous times to school, just to, you know, each time she goes into a new grade, she takes it in and shows all the kids all the different pins that she received.
That's cool.
And that's, you know, that is probably uh, the the bulk of it. Just be prepared for an emotional week for everybody in the family. It does happen to be a time when family do seem to kind of get on each other's nerves and get under each other's skin. So just, pack yourself full of patience and, just remember that this is, this is the ultimate honor that your loved one will ever receive. So you want to enjoy as much of it as you possibly can.
You had the experience of kind of being able to see it from the department's point of view, too, and you just talked about the pins and some people have badges. You've probably seen some of the departments that were well prepared and maybe had their officers briefed, and then maybe other departments that didn't. Do you have any suggestions for that side of it as well?
The departments that are probably the best prepared are the ones from that immediate area. There's some states that on a regular basis they send a big group of officers. Mm. Unfortunately, Colorado, isn't always up to doing that, which is a little bit disappointing. But I do think we're getting there. I know this year quite a few officers are going to go from the state. Make your presence known to the family. Mm-hmm. Let the family know, who you are and what department you're with so that they know that their state is represented. Mm-hmm. Also, you're going to be around a lot of people are going to ask you questions. They don't know where to go. They don't know what to do. So make yourself aware of where all the information desks are because, the family members, when they don't know where to go, they're going to ask an officer. It doesn't matter where the officer is from. If they can maybe even get, a map of the different hotels, maybe try to figure out what the bus schedule is for the survivor buses and, just try to get as much information as you can regarding how the whole process works. It is a very well-oiled machine, and if everybody is where they are supposed to be, when they're supposed to be, everything does work very well. But it is confusing and it is overwhelming. Yeah. And I would say also, take your pockets full of things. The challenge pins are big, and the kids just go wild over that stuff. They take such pride in it. And you need to remember that these are kids that were in that police network, and now all of a sudden, they maybe haven't been for the last year, and now they're back in it, and they're so excited. And they just, hold their hand, put your arm around them. Just embrace them, because you'll find that, especially with the children, that, they just want somebody to give them a hug and love them.
Yeah. Isn't that the bottom line for everybody?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Kelly. I appreciate your time and I appreciate what you're doing. And I know in Colorado, we try to prepare a goodie bag of things for our survivors to take. And that's one of the reasons we're compiling all of this together, is to at least make a list, which we'll put on the website, so that people can at least try to be a little bit better prepared. It may not be perfect, and we're doing our best, but it gives people a little bit of a leg up on trying to avoid those moments where you feel uncomfortable or embarrassed or awkward, or I wish I would have done that, and nobody
right.
needs to have any more regrets.
Right,
so,
right.
Thank you very much for what you're doing, and thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. My next guest is Donnie Archuleta, who is the vice president of the Colorado Chapter of Concerns of Police Survivors. And his son was a New Mexico State Trooper that was killed in the line of duty. Donnie, thank you very much for sharing your time with us. Can you maybe share a little bit about your story?
Yes, John, thank you for allowing me to partake in this endeavor. I feel honored to do so.
Mm-hmm.
My story begins in basically June of 2006, June 4th, 2006 to be exact. It was a Sunday. It was a good day for the Archuleta family. One of the things that I do in my part-time work is I am a sports official. So that particular day, I had the honor of doing a high school all-star game at Coors Field. Mm. And that was pretty special. My parents were there and had a couple nephews there to watch. And also what was going on in New Mexico that day is my son's oldest daughter was having her first Holy Communion.
Wow.
So they were celebrating in New Mexico as well. James, at the time, was working a swing shift. So, and in fact, he called into work a couple hours later than normal so he could spend some additional time with his daughter and mm-hmm. his family in New Mexico. The way I understand what happened that day is shortly after James went on duty, probably around 6:30 or 7 p.m., he was called to a small town about 20 miles from Espanola, where he was stationed. Espanola, for those of you that don't know, is about 20 miles north of Santa Fe. It's not a big town, maybe 10,000 people or so. And he was called to a smaller town that had some problems at a horse track. Apparently there was a shooting over there.
Hmm.
It seemed to take, from what I understand, himself, a couple other New Mexico State Police officers, and some other local sheriffs were at that scene for about 3 hours before they cleared everybody and finished their preliminary investigation there. It was about 10:20 p.m. James was scheduled to be off at 10, but they got a call in of there was a shooting victim who was at the Espanola Hospital, which was about 15 miles from where James was at. They asked James to do the call, and being the dutiful person he was, he said sure, even though he was supposed to have been off work. For those of you who have traveled through northern New Mexico, the roads are very rural. They're mostly single lane. They're very dark. Sometimes there's lots of curves. And on this particular highway, Highway 84, that runs from Espanola to Chama, New Mexico, there's virtually no lighting whatsoever. James began his call to Espanola. 3 miles from where he was at, we're not exactly sure of the time frame, but the investigators feel it was just several minutes, somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes before James got to this particular location, that a car had hit a cow in the head. The cow was kind of standing on the side of the road. The cow stumbled and died right in the middle of the lane. And as James came around this right-hand corner, he ran over the cow with the bottom of the patrol car. We know from the investigation that James never saw the cow because there was no skid marks, but he did hit his brakes because the shock lights had burnt.
Right.
So as, and we know he was traveling at a high rate of speed, and I've come to learn that the reason for that was, I guess, police officers, when there is a shooting victim, they need to get to that victim as soon as possible in case for witness purposes and declaration of death purposes and that type of thing. So
mm-hmm.
I've kind of come to understand that there is a strong sense of urgency to get to a shooting victim. So as James starts to drag this cow under his patrol car, his car begins to list to the left side, the driver's side. He skids for, I don't remember, several, maybe 100 feet. The details are a little sketchy in my mind because it's been now almost 4 years. But he flips once after going on the left side for probably about 75 or 100 feet. The car flips and becomes airborne. When it contacts the ground about another 100 feet away, it slips again. At that point, James is ejected from the car, and his body goes into the opposite lane and rolls several hundred feet. The car once again hits the ground and slips once again and ends up on the right side of the road, on its wheels, and up against a hill. The whole length of the accident is a little bit less than 900 feet. So that's three football lengths.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pretty violent and horrific accident. And we know from the police report and in the autopsy that James did not suffer. He was killed immediately when he was ejected. So I got a call about 1:20 in the morning from his fiance, and she gave me the grim news. And this is where it gets a little tough for me. The next few hours, my role, because I'm the oldest son, was to call my parents and my brothers and sisters and James's stepmother and, you know, those people that have had an impact on his life here in Colorado. So by the time I was able to gather myself and pack my clothes and try to drive to New Mexico, which from my house at that point was roughly a six-hour drive. There's really no way to fly. I mean, there is, but it would have taken longer to fly than it would to drive. So my brother, my younger brother, who is an Irvine, who happens to be an Arapaho County sheriff, volunteered to ride with me. And it turned out to be a big blessing that he was able to accompany me on that trip. So we got to New Mexico probably around 10 a.m. My two daughters, I greeted them there at James's mother's house. And, of course, it was very emotional for everybody. Just the absolute shock of it all. And, you know, James was 27 years old. He was a Marine reservist. He'd already done one tour in Iraq. And, you know, he was just overall a pretty tough little guy. And so it was kind of overwhelming that this, you know, could happen to him. I was able to finally catch up with his fiance probably around 11:30 or 12. And, you know, there was just a lot of business to take care of. The next day we made the arrangements for the funeral. James's mom and I have been divorced probably, when did we get divorced? 1983, I believe. So it was there was a little bit of uncomfortableness, if that's the right way to say it, but you know, we were able to put aside our personal differences and take care of what needed to be taken care of. The funeral, which took place on Wednesday night was a rosary, and they had to hold it at the local high school because no church in that small town could accommodate the large crowd. Thursday, the day of the funeral, was a very, very long and at times very honorable day, but at the end of the day, it turned out that it was also a very difficult day. I was in awe because I'd never been to a police funeral. I was in awe of the procession. I was in awe of the way that the strangers would stand on the side of the road and some men were saluting with tears in their eyes. And from the small town where they did the funeral called Chimayo, New Mexico, to the Santa Fe National Cemetery was about, probably again, about 15 miles. And by our estimate, there was over 250 police vehicles. Mm. And he's honorably buried at the National Cemetery in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I had not heard of cops, obviously, until that happened.
Mm-hmm.
We were approached at the funeral home, I think, on either Tuesday or Wednesday by Cheryl Schultz, who is the president of the New Mexico chapter. And she told us that, you know, next year you will be have the opportunity to be honored in Washington. And she gave us a little bit of a briefing. She didn't talk to us too much. Maybe 10 minutes, she gave us her card and said, you know, that she would be in touch with us, you know, down the road. And I thought that was a very... Well, it touched me. It made me know that immediately that there are people out there who understand and have gone through what they were going through. So I contacted Colorado Cops when I got back, probably about 3 months after that. 3 or 4 months after that, I don't know who I initially contacted. I want to believe I contacted Don Enloe via email.
Mm-hmm.
Told him who I was and a little bit about our story. And he said that, you know, we were welcome. I was welcome to attend a meeting or something like that. And at the time, I was unemployed except for my officiating jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I had told him, well, you know, maybe after a year's gone by or so, I'll contact you again and see, you know, if I may have a role in this organization or not and see if it's for me. And they also were, Colorado also was very generous to give me a little bit of money. I believe they gave me $300 to help with a D.C. trip. In New Mexico, pitched in as well. And so as 2007 rolled along and we're planning the trip to D.C., there ended up being 23 representatives in D.C. for James. There was about a dozen of us from Colorado and another 12 or 13 from New Mexico. And you know, none of us knew what to expect. I had not even seen a video. I'd only gone to maybe the national website once or twice. We really didn't have any briefings per se on, you know, what to wear, what not to wear, what to take, what not to take. We knew about the schedule of events and, you know, that was pretty much it. So and everybody was, you know, doing different types of travel arrangements. We didn't have the chance to travel together. So just the worry about, you know, hopefully everybody made it there safe and sound and was able to get to D.C. hassle-free. That was a big concern, and I know I felt some anxiety about that. And one of the things that I would tell survivors that are going for the first time is that's a very normal feeling,
yeah,
to feel that anxiety, especially if you're going with a large group. And even if you're not, because you don't know what to expect. And one of the first things, obviously, that happens in D.C. is you get off the plane, the D.C. Police Department is there to greet you. They're there to assist you with your luggage. They're there to escort you to the buses and allow them to do their job. That's what I would say for the ones that are going there the first year. They're very respectful. They're very honored to be there to assist survivors. And I think, from what I could tell, they take great pride in having that responsibility because they're not in their typical everyday police uniforms. They're in their dress police uniforms. Their shoes are shined. Their belt buckles are polished. Their brass is polished. They'll have white gloves on. And for them, it's a very formal and honorable duty. And I would encourage survivors to allow them to assist you in any way you need assistance. And they will be glad to do so. We then, once you're on the bus and, you know, you wait for the bus to fill up, they're not the big over-the-road buses. They're maybe 20-passenger buses. So you're not going to wait a long time on the bus. And then you're going to be escorted to your hotel via a police motorcycle motorcade. That is pretty awesome. But it will be bring back those memories of the procession that you witnessed when, you know, your police officer had their service. So be prepared to feel that emotion again and know it's okay to feel that emotion, because everybody on that bus is feeling it with you. And I think my sister-in-law took a video. No, actually, she wasn't there at that time. My brother tried to take a video, but he was having some problems with his camera.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing I would say is, if you have access to video cameras, maybe have two. If you want to videotape that, because it is something to cherish. It really is. And then you arrive at the hotel. You know, the check-in process can be a little difficult just because there's so many people arriving at the same time.
Right.
And, you know, just be patient. From what I witnessed, we didn't have any problems with our rooms or check-in or anything other than that it took a while. I know some other people were having some difficulties. You know, their rooms were not available, those types of issues. So maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea a day or two before, have somebody from your party just call the hotel and make sure that everything is okay. You know, I didn't see too many people having problems, but it could be. And understand D.C. is a very busy place at that time of year.
Yeah.
So if you happen to drive your own vehicle, it's going to be tough to get around, just unless you know the D.C. area. But take advantage of the shuttles that are available to you. One of the things that happened on May 15th, the day of this service, it's also one of my granddaughter's birthday, and this happened to be her 7th birthday. So after everything was done that day, my daughter and her family was staying at another hotel, and the shuttles quit going maybe around 5 or 6, and we had talked to some police officers at our hotel and said, you know, can we get a ride back? Otherwise, we're not going to be able to go to her birthday party. And they said, sure. They said, an officer gave me her business card and said, you just call me when you're ready and I'll come pick you up. If I'm not at that hotel, I'll come pick you up and bring you back to your hotel. And that's exactly what she did. So the officers that are there to assist you. And once again, once you're at the hotel, they're going to be from different departments, but they are there for you. And take advantage of their kindness.
Yeah.
Because it makes them feel proud. And you can see in their face and in their demeanor when they are able to assist you. As far as the Police Week itself, the candlelight vigil, I don't remember what day it is this year. I want to say it's Thursday. When we went, the candlelight vigil was on a Tuesday, and the service was the very next day. So we had a very late night for the candlelight vigil, and then a very long day for the service on May 15th. I would urge everybody to get as much rest as you possibly can on May 14th. I know some people want to go sightseeing. I recommend that you don't, because then it's just you're trying to cram too much into an already crowded week. Definitely take advantage of the seminars. I know the first seminar I went to, I actually went with my dad because they don't have grandfather or grandparent seminars. So I asked my dad to go with me to the fathers who had lost a child in an accident. And I was very impressed with the fathers that were there and the willingness to share their story. And I can remember one gentleman, and I've met him on a couple other occasions since, a parents retreat and board training and those types of things. His son was killed 12, 13, 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still bitter about that and was very honest about that. And he himself is a retired police officer. And it made me realize that it's okay to have these feelings of loss and grief and even anger and disappointment and all those emotions that we've all felt since the loss of our officer. It's okay to have those. And I immediately felt comfortable in that room, knowing that here I am as the first-year survivor. That, let's see, it had been, at that time, it had been 11 months since the accident. And a man who has had 12 years to deal with this is feeling the exact same thing that I'm feeling. And it's okay to share those feelings, and I would encourage every survivor that goes to these seminars to go and share and listen and learn and take something from that. You will take something from those seminars that you will use the rest of your life, and I really believe that. Even if it's just one thing that somebody said, if it's one idea that somebody gave you as to what they do when they're feeling, when they're having a bad day, you will take something from every seminar you go to. So I definitely encourage you to go to as many of them as you can, and there are plenty, and that's why they want you to get there 2 days before or 3 days before the service on May 15th is to take advantage of those seminars because they are very healing.
Yeah.
I would also encourage you to, if you have not met somebody from your home state who is a member of COPS, to find somebody from your home state. If nobody is there from your home state, talk to, you know, anybody that you know is a COPS member and find out who that regional, that regional president is.
Mm-hmm.
In our region, Colorado, we have 9 states, and our regional director lives in Minnesota. And I know the regional directors will all be. So even if you can't find somebody from your state, find and talk to your regional person. And again, if you need anything additional, if you have some questions, concerns, that person will get you to the person that will most be able to help you. So what I'm really saying is take advantage of the people that are there, because they were all first-year survivors at one time as well. And they completely understand what you're going through. And they completely relate to what you're going through. And I know at one time we were a little confused about what time we were going to catch the bus, I think, to go to the candlelight vigil. Mm-hmm. And I happened to find Cheryl Schultz from New Mexico, and I said, we're not really sure where to go. She literally took me by the hand and said, you go over here. And she walked me to where we needed to be.
Wow.
And that's the kind of assistance you will find with the COPS members. May 15th, if you are one of the first-year survivors that is going to sit in the designated area for the ceremony. When we were there, it was about 80 degrees. Hmm. And we were in the conference room at 8 o'clock in the morning because they line you up. How do they do it? I'm not exactly sure how they do it, but they line you up in a very specific order, because when you're loved one goes up to place the carnation in the flower circle, they want it done in an orderly way, because there will be an MC who will announce your officer's name and, you know, what state they're from and those types of things. So just be prepared for a very long day. At the Capitol, there's no water, so make sure that you have plenty of water for whomever is going to be there that day. Make sure you prepared for changes in weather. We were, like I said, when we were there, it was pretty much 80, 85 degrees all day, no clouds. It got a little hot, to say the least.
Yeah.
So you know, anything to keep you cool, umbrellas, you know, the little water bottles that have the little fan, definitely sunscreen, sunglasses, lotions. You're even going to want some snacks. You know, you'll probably have breakfast in the morning, but then there's no food available until you're done with the ceremony. And when we were there, President Bush was there, he shook hands with every family. So the ceremony did not end probably after 5 p.m. Again, it's a very long day. It's a very honorable day. It's also a very difficult day. And all I can say is be prepared as much as you can, knowing that, you know, you're going to be there for several hours, possibly. I know I've heard other ceremonies have not lasted that long. I guess last year it rained all day. So you would want to be prepared for dealing with that element as well.
Yeah.
Raincoats, umbrellas. You know, definitely you're going to be sitting on the grass. You'll be in seats, but they're on a grassy area, so if it's going to be wet, you know, it might not hurt to throw in some extra socks, you know, little things like that. If you're a person who's prone to get cold when it gets wet, you know, definitely some light gloves, hats, whatever you need to get through that day. Because there's, from what I understand, unless it's an emergency, they're not going to let you leave once the ceremony starts. And if you're going there as an observer of the ceremony, there's no chairs. you know, like the fold-up lawn chairs that we all have, they do not allow that. So you're going to be standing all day. So if you have blankets to throw down on the ground to sit on, you know, you may want to have some of those types of things. I definitely encourage, if you have a large group, to ride together on the bus. Because you're the ones that, if you're an observer, you're the ones that are going to get on the bus first. Okay?
Yeah.
Because it's going to be, they want everybody that's observing there, and then the survivors come in later, and because you walk through, when your family walks through, if you're the honoree family, all the police officers that are lining the walkway will be saluting you. So there is definitely some ceremony to this event. Again, if you're an observer, understand your day is going to be a little bit longer than it is for the survivor out of the element. So, you know, be prepared for, you know, whatever, for all possibilities. That includes rain, sunshine, you know, wetness. Definitely, if, you know, you're not a person who can stand up all day, you know, bring a blanket, as I said. Wear shoes that are not going to hurt your feet at the end of the day or even in the middle of the day. And just know that this is your day. Even though it's a long day, it's a very honorable day. This day is designed to honor you, the first-year survivor. That's what this day is for. It's also to honor your officer. This day is mostly about you. And take pride in that. And accept the fact that the people that are there, the officers that are there to honor you. One of the great things that I was presented with, well, after we had met the president, you know, he was meeting other families. So there was a little, there was a break in the ceremony for us, probably of a couple of hours. And the California State Patrol, I know he's a higher ranking patrol officer, I can't his name, but he found me outside the rope. He called me over and they presented me with, what's the word I'm looking for, John? Like a plaque.
Okay.
You know, something like that.
I can remember.
And it was
plaque.
In a nice folder, you know, honoring, you know, my son, who was also a state patrol officer. So, and it's my understanding that they do that for every state police officer or trooper that perishes in the line of duty. So it just felt very honorable that these strangers from California would take the time to seek me out and honor me.
That's cool.
And I know if I saw that man walking in downtown Denver, I'd recognize him immediately.
Wow.
So those types of things are going to happen. Accept them with grace, with dignity, and with honor. And I think if you're able to understand that this is a once-in-a-lifetime event designed specifically for you, to honor you, I think you'll find it very rewarding. Sure, it's going to be emotional. It's going to be very emotional at times. But it's also a very rewarding experience. And that's about all I have to say about D.C. The other thing I would say, after you get back from D.C., when you get back to your normal daily life, whether it be a week or two after, expect to hit a little bit of a lull, because you're going to be overwhelmed with that whole week. It really is surreal at times. somewhere down the road, and everybody's different. It may be a few weeks for some, maybe a few months for some. For me, it was about, it was the next year. It was about a year later that week. I once again went back to everything that had happened, you know, in that two-year period. So just be prepared for that emotionally, you know, and if you have to go talk to somebody, go talk to somebody. You know, if you've made a cop's friend, call that person. That's what they're there for, is to help you get through your tough moments. And that's part of why I joined Colorado Cops. I first went to the Colorado Cops picnic that summer of 07. So this was maybe a couple of months after Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
There was only a handful of people there. And I thought Colorado, had a bigger chapter. And at that time, I knew that there needed to be more involvement. And I felt very compelled to become involved. And I listened to the advice of somebody that I had talked to in Washington that said, if you're thinking about being on a state chapter, wait at least 2 years, maybe even three from the accident before you become involved. National says 1 year. I think that's too early for most people. I think 2 to 3 years after your police officer has perished in the line of duty, if you feel compelled, that's a good time to become involved. And I first was elected a trustee in November of 07, and they're two-year terms, and this past November of 09, I became our vice president. And Kelly Young, who is our president also, that's when she became president. So we have been doing some really fantastic things here in Colorado, and I feel very proud to be part of Colorado Cops. Even though my son was a New Mexico State Police officer, he lived here till he was about 15 years old. So his Colorado connection is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, well, for me, what I get out of it is it's a way to continue his legacy. It's a way to honor his life. And it's also a way for me to heal for myself. And I'm getting a lot of reward out of being part of this organization. And I'm looking forward to even becoming more involved and feeling more rewards and helping other survivors get through whatever it is they're going through and helping them understand that, you know, you're not alone. And if I may regress just a little bit, my first parents' retreat I went to was, well, this would have been October of 07. And once again, being a first-year parent, so to speak, this was my first time at parents' retreat. Again, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how to think. I didn't know how I was supposed to act. I didn't know how I was supposed to be. And I remember a gentleman. He's from Delaware, and his name escapes me off the top of my head. He came up to me, because I'd been there about 2 hours and hadn't really talked to anybody. He came up to me and shook my hand, put his arms around me, and with tears in his eyes, he said, "Welcome, and feel proud of yourself for being here." Mm. And I had come to find out that he lost his son about 5 years before. So we understand what you're going through. We get it.
Yeah.
And any time that I can be of assistance to somebody who is a survivor, I cherish that opportunity. And I hope this little interview will help you understand that you're not alone. There are thousands of people who have experienced a very similar loss. I will never say it's exactly the same, because it's not exactly the same for everybody. But it's as close to being the same for everybody as it can possibly be. And I want to thank Mr. Marks for giving me this opportunity to speak to you today. And if you would like to get in touch with me, again, my name is Don Archuleta. I'm the Vice President of Colorado COPS. You can do so through our ColoradoCOPS.org website. And again, thank you for your time.
Donnie, thank you for your time, and thank you for your service to survivors everywhere. We appreciate all the work you're putting in, and it really does make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marks, and you have a great day.